One, two, three. Happy Friday, Tucson. Welcome to the Creative City Show here on 1030 The Voice, where every day with me, your host, Zach Yenser, we share the stories and strategies of the people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. And along the way, we envision, we debate, we discuss the issues and themes critical to getting us there, because I believe our potential as a community, as a region, as a city is greater than we know, and our future is closer around the corner. Our best possible future is closer around the corner than we realize. I'm looking forward to today's show. We've got a strong Friday finish for you, Tucson, on The Voice here. 790-2040 is your live line to engage in the conversation. Let me set the day up real quick, and then we'll get it going, Tucson. I'm excited. We're going to spend the first hour kind of doing a little bit of a Friday weekly wrap-up. I'm going to be a little bit humorous and share just one more thing. Millennials are killing. Millennials kill lots of things, apparently. We've killed one other thing, and I'm excited to share that with you. Just a little bit of fun and levity here on this Friday. But seriously, there's something that we are just absolutely ruining as a generation, and I'm pretty happy about it. So I'll tell you about that in a minute. And then we're going to do a little bit of a kind of connecting the dots type of theme of a Friday. We often do that here on the show, where we make sense of the news and happenings that was here on the show and in our region overall. We start the week kind of that way. We often end the week kind of that way. But there's a wrinkle today. At 10:50, I'm really excited to have gotten what happened to be an impromptu opportunity to have Arizona Senator McSally on the show for the last 10 minutes of the 10 o'clock hour. She will be on our live line beginning at 10:50 this morning, and she's got 10 minutes. So she will be on time. I will be on time, and if you're listening, kind of keep that block carved out on your schedules, because I want to ask her about some of her Southern Arizona priorities. We have 10 minutes, and time just goes so fast here on the show, but I'm going to try to ask her some questions related to the border, USMCA, the defense appropriations bill legislation that she's been working on, and just try to get kind of a good overview of the projects she's working on. That will take us through to 11 o'clock. So again, 10:50, Senator Martha McSally comes to our live line to have a 10-minute conversation about her priorities for Southern Arizona. And then at 11 o'clock, we're going to end the week the way we started it. So we had a startup accelerator called the Founder Institute in studio on Monday to start the week. Well, to end the week, we're going to talk to Climb, C-L-I-M-B, another tech and startup accelerator in Tucson. So we're going to start and end the week talking about Tucson's innovation economy, talk with the graduates, talk with the program lead about what is going on in our community related to entrepreneurship and innovation. And that will take us all the way to Bill Buckmaster, where these 11 hours of local radio just keep continuing here on 1030 The Voice. So my last intro sentence, let's do this. I'm going to because I have 10 minutes with Senator Martha McSally. This is not because it's my first interview with her, actually. Many of you know my policy is my first elected interview is to not have live phone calls. I'm going to do the same, but for a completely different reason. I have 4 to 5 big topics I would love to get kind of a lightning round response on, since we have the senator for 10 minutes. So what I want to do is take the next 40 minutes, and I want to take your phone calls on what you would like me to ask her. I've been taking this all morning on my social media. Questions and concerns from diverse areas of our community, by the way, since we have her in studio for 10 minutes, what are the priorities and issues and things that we want to talk to our senator about here in Southern Arizona? If you've got something on your mind, or you have a question, or you have a concern, give us a call here until 10:50 on 790 2040. 790-2040 is our live line. What question would you like me to ask the senator? And if I can make it work, I will. And that's my commitment to anyone who's commented on Facebook or has messaged me. I'm going to do my very best to ask good questions and get a good overview of the senator's priorities for Tucson, our region, and Southern Arizona. Okay, so getting that out of the way. Again, 790-2040. Let me just repeat one more time. 520-790-2040. Call in with anything and everything related to questions. If you had a seat across from Senator McSally, what would you ask her? I want to know. 790-2040. All right. So millennials are known as killers. They kill things. This is the this is the media verbiage. In fact, there's an article. You know, when you search, there's an article, and this is kind of comical. And there's many people who've done comical renditions of this. But here are all the things millennials are killing. There's 26 of them. They're killing the real estate industry. They're not buying homes. They are killing handshakes. Millennials just aren't handshaking anymore. Millennials are killing breakfast cereal. P.S. That's what I had for breakfast. But all the other millennials are killing breakfast cereal. Millennials are killing the 9-to-5. The 9-to-5 is just almost dead. Millennials are killing honeymoons. Who's going on honeymoons anymore? Millennials are killing, get this, pants. All right, pants are out. Leggings are in. Millennials are killing pants. Millennials are killing things like Costco. Poor Costco. Millennials are killing Costco. Millennials are killing Merry Christmas. That's an interesting one. Millennials are killing the hotel industry. Why go to a hotel if you can go to a cool economy inn? Millennials are killing chain restaurants. Millennials are killing cash. They're killing lunch. They're killing canned tuna. This has to be, I think, the most depressing thing that millennials have waged war on is canned tuna. Gotta love that canned tuna. The Canadian tourism industry. Oh, man. The Canadian tourism industry. Beer. Millennials are just killing beer. And large turkeys. Boy, they're not putting this in order, are they? They're killing large turkeys. And fabric softener. And bar soap. And diamonds. And the list goes on and on and on. Well, I read today about another thing that millennials are killing, and I'm actually pretty happy about it. Millennials are killing the U.S. divorce rate. Millennials are causing the U.S. divorce rate to plummet because they're waiting until all is secure before tying the knot, says Bloomberg. New data shows younger couples are approaching relationships very differently from baby boomers who married young, divorced, remarried, and so on. Gen X, and especially millennials, are being pickier about who they marry, tying the knot at older ages when education, careers, and finances are on track. The result is a U.S. divorce rate that dropped 18% from 2008 to 2016, says a researcher from the University of Maryland, Philip Cohen. Demographers already knew the divorce rate was falling, even if the average American didn't. Their question, however, was why? And what do current trends mean for the marital prospects of today's newlyweds? One theory, of course, was that divorce rates are falling largely because of other demographic changes. Well, aging population, older people less likely to get divorced, mellowing out boomers. But even when the research controls for factors like age, the divorce rate over the same period still dropped 8%. The marriage rate has also fallen over the last several decades, but Cohen calculates, this researcher from the University of Maryland calculates, that the divorce rate as a ratio of divorces to the total number of married women. So the divorce rate decline isn't a reflection of a decline in marriages. Rather, it's evidence that marriages today have a greater chance of lasting than marriages did 10 years ago, says Susan Brown, a sociology professor at Bowling Green State University. The change among young people is particularly striking. The characteristics of young married couples today signal a sustained decline in divorce rates in the coming years. Younger people indeed do get the credit for fewer divorces because boomers have continued to divorce at unusually high rates all the way into their 60s and 70s. From 1990 to 2015, according to Bowling Green's National Center for Family and Marriage Research, the divorce rate doubled for people aged 55 to 64. Today's young couples don't seem to be following the same path. The reason is that the married population is getting older and more highly educated. I saw this morning. I had to bring this up. In fact, one of the core tenets that this show started on, even a year and a half ago, was on intergenerational relationship and intergenerational community. So at my core, in my heart, I have a real desire to talk about our generations and our generations in a intelligent and informed way. And I saw this article and I couldn't keep myself from taking a comical approach to this issue, because for all the things that millennials are killing, like cereal and pants and cheese and Canadian trips, the one thing that they are taking a swing at, evidently, is the divorce rate in this country. So the point being is that our generations cannot be stereotyped, should not be, that there are some things that change generation to generation, but there are also always improvements and development and things that change in a positive way from generation to generation. And that was my Friday comical take, but also hopefully informative take on something that millennials are taking a swipe at. That is a good thing. You know, it's interesting. I'll speak to one larger trend and then go to a break. And I got a lot of heat for this, for bringing this up in certain circles. But they actually, at the University of Texas, about 5, maybe 10 years ago, did a survey, and they looked at the divorce rates of a place like New Jersey, you know, a little more of the liberal East Coast, Northwest. Looked at the divorce rates in the Bible Belt in the South. And they actually found that the divorce rates in the Bible Belt were staggeringly higher than the divorce rates in the kind of like the liberal northeastern coastal areas of the country. Now, I'm sure that the study factored for, maybe it didn't, maybe this is where the hole is, you know, controlled for things like, you know, I'm supposedly, I would imagine, you know, the marital rate in some areas is different for whatever reason, waiting longer or co-living or other things like that. So there's a lot of factors there to compare. But it's really interesting to see that in as we see millennials starting to wait till they're getting older, whether they get their career underway, they get their student loans down, they get their pay up, they buy a home for the first time, it's all taking longer. But a byproduct of it taking longer is you get more mature people who are solidified in their life and career at a different level. And so you're seeing the divorce rate go down, whereas in places like the Bible Belt, where some younger marriages are still being supported, you're seeing people who just don't have it all built in, you know, in the ability to be able to carry on for the long haul. So it's kind of interesting when we look at different demographics and different cultures, even within subcultures within the United States, and just examine those statistics. And I think where I was going with that is, as our millennials, our friendly millennials, are getting married, they probably need support in that. I know that for myself. And I was actually with a friend of mine who's been married even a little bit longer than I have. But we're both on the younger side of being married, younger side of having kids compared to our peers, where, you know, some peers that are 5, 6 years older than us are still waiting on marriage and kids, where we've been married and some of us have kids and we've had that for 5 years. So it's an interesting thing, even for me as a younger professional, working to balance career and pay and family. Anyway, I digress before I put myself on the couch and do a therapy psychoanalysis session on myself. That's not what you guys are here to listen to, but it's just interesting to to have a little fun take, I think, on millennials. By the way, real quick before I go to break, I got an email, and I'm going to probably do an interview about how millennials are changing things. Let's not forget that on the younger side, we're starting to see millennials on the younger side being more towards 25 and up. So college students, at least the lower, the freshman and sophomore, college students, freshman and sophomore are no longer millennials. We're talking about a completely different generation. So I think our even though I went after this in a lighthearted way, our conversation about millennials hasn't matured along with the generation. We're now talking about 25 to 40 year olds who are two or three years into their career, that are in mid-level management, that are on their second, third, or fourth job. And often we talk about that generation like they're still in high school trying to figure life out. And there is a generation in high school trying to figure life out. It's just not millennials anymore. It's a completely different generation. So I think our narrative has to mature a little bit. It's almost like my dad's a boomer. It's almost like if people treated my dad like he was 15, right? He was a boomer when he was 15, right? He was considered a boomer generation, right? But he's not looked at that way now, you know? And I don't think that the cultural narrative has yet shifted for millennials. But I think smart people who are paying attention know that we've moved on, like it or not. We're on to a different younger generation who's going to bring the sky falling in. So, did I say that out loud? Just kidding. Some of you listening will know that before I got into radio, and actually one of the reasons I got into radio was I was doing consulting work and work on intergenerational collaboration and connectivity for creativity in workplaces and in organizations. So I've had both fun and serious conversations around this topic many times in the past, and it's a good one and one I'm passionate about. All right, Tucson, when we come back, we'll continue. That was a lighthearted way to start. We'll continue with a connecting the dots type of Friday, talk about a little bit of recent news that came in over the week, and then we're gearing up for, in less than a half an hour, we will have Arizona Senator Martha McSally on the line for about 10 minutes to chat with us about her Southern Arizona priorities. You're on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back. Tucson, welcome back to this first hour of two of the Creative City Show here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. You bring the trust and local listening. We do our best to bring high quality news and talk your way. And together, that's a partnership that we really believe is worth having here on The Voice. So thank you for your trust. Thank you for your local listening. And speaking of news and talk, I want to make sure that the lines are open for the next about 25 minutes or so at 10:50 on the dot and out at 11 o'clock. On the dot will be Senator Martha McSally, Arizona Senator Martha McSally, on our live line for the 10:50 to 11 o'clock segment of our show. And I want to open up an opportunity if you want to call in, either talk on the air and talk with me about, or leave it with our producer, Bob. Any issues or questions or thoughts that you want asked of Senator Martha McSally. I have been taking requests throughout the morning and have been connecting with different audiences and different folks around the city and saying, hey, I've got 10 minutes. What are the things that Southern Arizona really wants to know in terms of the senator's priorities? So I have a list of pretty diverse questions and issues, and I am open to adding to that list if you want to call in and talk about that and share some of your thoughts. And if I can get to it with her, I certainly will. I want to talk with the senator about her work on the defense appropriations bill. It has some Southern Arizona benefits to it. I want to talk with the senator also about her opposition to a seasonality provision in the USMCA, hopefully. So we've talked about the USMCA quite a bit on the show, so I hope to get to that with her as well. And then I also want to touch on some immigration and border policy. There's a lot of concern about what's happening at the border, especially in terms of just the culture and trade and economy of even cities like Nogales, who are on the American side, even struggling in light of some of the broader border challenges. And then I'd also be curious to get her impression of the characterization this week of the border detention centers as concentration camps. So I'm curious to ask her kind of an open-end question about that and see what she thinks. So those are some of my questions that I'd like to ask the senator. Again, I got 10 minutes. I'm assuming that, you know, a 2-minute response, 1 to 2 minute response is likely. So I'm really hoping to hone in on a few things that are really important. And I'm excited about it. So if you have any thoughts on that, let's talk Southern Arizona the rest of this hour and call in with your thoughts, 520-790-2040. In the meantime, a little bit of news that came out this week. We start our week on the show talking about news over the weekend, and we end our week talking about news that happened over the week and try to make sense of it. I've known about this news for a while, but it just made its way into the news, into publications here in Tucson. The U of A has opened another global micro campus, this time in Lima, Peru. The micro campuses allow a student to earn both a degree from the U of A and from a partnering university in that country. The micro campus of the Lima University offers 6 academic paths, including accelerated master's options, allowing students to earn up to 3 degrees in as little as 5 years, says this article, right up in the Star. U of A colleges that offer degrees at this micro campus will include the College of Architecture, Planning and Landscape Architecture, the LR College of Management, the College of Engineering, the James E. Rogers College of Law, and the College of Social and Behavioral Sciences. Micro campuses will provide students worldwide with affordable access to a top quality education while promoting joint research with international partners, says Brent White, the Vice Provost for Global Affairs and Dean of Global Campuses. So some exciting news there. The university being partnered with was founded in 1994. The other news out of the U of A, it's probably worth mentioning, and it's not breaking news by any means, but it's just recently been put out there that there will be a master's in entrepreneurship program coming out of the University of Arizona, I believe, going into the fall. So they're taking their first applications for that cohort. I didn't come in prepared to talk about that, so that's off of my top of my head. I will verify during the break, make sure I got all that information correct. But going off of, you know, what I'm remembering from past readings of this. So some exciting news out of the University of Arizona. So I was looking back on this week, and I'm curious to engage maybe for one last time with you here on the air this week, this conversation. I call often our Fridays connecting the dots, because I take a look back at Monday through Thursday and I go, what were the common themes? What were the themes that seemed to pop up over and over again? Because those are themes often accidental that mean that they matter to a large degree in the city. It could have been an issue that you called in about. It could have been something that I came into the studio to talk about. And I got to tell you that I don't plan for this stuff either. And I really wish I could say, you know, 4 weeks ago, I planned on a themed week to talk about X, Y, and Z. That would be the cool answer, right? That would be the right answer. But I got to tell you, I don't plan this stuff. I did not plan to have Ernesto Portillo and the Juneteenth crew and the fighting urban sprawl and City Hall conversation yesterday. 3 of our 4 days involved some very distinct conversations about the identity and the path of our Tucson community. That was not on purpose. So I look back on the week and I look at those themes and go, interesting, why did that happen and what was meaningful and why did we have those conversations? And what has really stood out to me, here's even a deeper commonality. Here's even a deeper commonality. And this is crazy, Bob. I was thinking about this earlier this morning as I had Ernesto Portillo in on Tuesday to talk about how he found a booklet in his desk, if you missed the show, from 1966, 53 years ago. Tucson was just coming out of a minor recession, and it was having the same conversations that we're having today, right? It was the same exact conversation. with the same exact challenges, with the same exact solutions proposed. And that was my Tuesday conversation. In fact, it was so poignant. This article came out on Monday. It's called So Tucson Has a Few Challenges, So What? By Ernesto Portillo. By the way, it's his last week at the Star next week. He's closing in on his last weekend as a writer for the Star, 19 years with the Star. I've actually asked Ernesto Portillo to potentially consider coming on the show consistently, not because we agree all the time, and not because the things he points out are necessarily popular or mainstream, but because they, I think, are a valuable opinion reflecting a very core view and perspective and component of our community in Tucson. So he hasn't said yes or no yet, and there's no pressure on that, but I just really thought that was a valuable 2 hours, in fact. So his article came out on Monday. I said, I got to spend 2 hours talking about this, right? We had a conversation, you and I, here on the air, our first hour on Tuesday, and then Ernesto Portillo came in on the second hour in studio, and we had a conversation about it. And his takeaway was, look, to say that Tucson has common challenges with other cities, that Tucson's a beautiful city that people continue to come to, is not an excuse for not meeting the challenges and plugging some of the gaps. We need to figure out the identity and brand of Tucson still. We need the political willpower that comes from a city that is connected to its community to drive forward what we need to see in the city. And I had Ernesto in the studio because I didn't get that from his article. I read his article. I got to the end. I said, is that it? I mean, almost comically, as it was that short and sweet, and I didn't understand necessarily where it was going. And he answered that question in studio. So that was Tuesday, right? Thursday, directly yesterday, we spent about an hour and a half talking about a book that was printed by the University of Arizona Press a few years ago called Fighting Urban Sprawl, Fighting Sprawl and City Hall. And I have I've been personally pondering for the last 24 hours the fact that for the last 120 years, that Tucson seems to be having the same conversations about the same issues, proposing the same solutions. It just seems like the Tucson narrative is a whirlpool of constantly cycling ideas and solutions. I was fascinated going 10 years back from the handbook that Ernesto Portillo found. Was fascinated by the fact that the proposals were, or the conversation was, is Tucson a pastoral community of cattle and climate and cotton, or are we the next big tech hub? In the 1950s, the city of Tucson was proposing a brand of Tucson as a tech hub. And to some degree, up through the 80s, you had some tech companies that were coming into Tucson and were here until about the 80s. But in the 50s, they were having the same conversation that we were having today, right? The Chamber of Commerce logo at the time conflicted with the essence of what language is being produced and was being talked about the city. The question of, is Tucson the wide open Western dude ranch retreat for a bustling, dense East Coast? Or is Tucson to take itself seriously and to be taken seriously as a metropolitan area? This was conversation happening in the 1950s. Is Tucson a lifestyle and climate and culture community? Or is it zoned for science? And I put that in quotes. Is it zoned for science? The same questions back in the 1950s. The questions of, are the barrios blighted or are they misunderstood, is how I like to personally put it. The views of our barrios differ depending on who you're asking and who considers them to be what. And these are all good conversations to be having. I wanted to make that clear because a listener called in or messaged in and said, look, let's not forget that we're having the same conversations because some of the same folks who were having these conversations in their 20s back then are having them in their 70s and 80s now. We have to realize that. So I'm not saying that these conversations are not appropriate, that these conversations are not valuable, that we shouldn't be having these conversations. I'm saying that something should ring in us that these conversations haven't changed, that for 120 years, we have cycled around the same issues and the same questions and the same solutions. And I'm really not trying to be tongue-in-cheek. I'm not trying to be cheeky. I'm not trying to be kind of a shock jock by saying, but I mean, it comes back to that definition of when you do something over and over and over again and expect different results, you're not going to get the different results. I'll just leave it there. You're not going to get the different results. So it's fascinating to me that we had, on accident, separate from each other, not planned, two conversations, 72 hours apart, 48 hours apart, rather, talking about the same exact issue. I ran across a document called Building from the Best of Tucson, an architectural 80-page proposal on how do we build based off of Tucson's culture for the 20th and the 21st century. That's an older document, not 60s, 70s old, but probably turn of the century. And that document talks about how we can't keep sprawling anymore. We can't keep going out anymore. We got to start building up. We got to do it responsibly. It seems like as a community, we've got generally the right answers. A lot would argue with me on that. I would encourage you to do so. 520-790-2040. Because some of you would say that if we had gotten the right answers, we might have gotten the right solutions and that the right people haven't been around the table. And I will grant you that depending on the argument, for sure, because I am trying to see this from two different angles. But my concern is that it doesn't seem like we've had either the political capital or the civic leadership. I don't just mean elected civic leadership. I mean civic leadership that crosses sectors to be able to kind of parse these arguments and to come to a final conclusion that just doesn't end up as being a plan. Tucson is a gifted community. And I don't mean this negatively all the way. It's a gifted community in convening conversation. It is a gifted community in writing papers and strategic plans. Even I fall into that trap. I love me a strategic plan. I love me an 80-page document. I don't just mean reading it. I mean being a part of creating it, right? Because the challenges of 5 years ago are different from the challenges of today, granted. This community is gifted at creating, in some regards, at creating collaborative tables, literally. It is gifted at creating plans. But if I've met one Tucsonan, I've met two plans per Tucsonan that I've met. For every one person, it feels like everyone's got two plans. They and their mother have two plans. And I'm not the first to bring this up. I'm bringing this up because there's an opportunity to do so. This is not some, you know, brilliant observation. I think Tucson understands that about itself. It is a planning community. It is a collaborative community. But it isn't a community that takes that collaboration outside of the boardroom and past the actual plan. You know, some would say that one of the latest iterations of this, Imagine Greater Tucson was a document that was put together across a cross-section of this community. It's a beautiful product, and it's not being envisioned and modeled. And that's not just me saying that. I think that's a known fact. Plan Tucson is another document that has a community approval behind it. It was voted by the voters by a whopping majority, and in a few years from now, it'll be up for reapproval, if you will, another vote to vote and say, look, as a 600,000 person Tucson city limit community, is this the vision for our community that we see? And the first time and the last time it went through, it was. And it's fascinating because I will hear folks say, well, this is the dominant narrative that our community wants. Well, if that's the case, then why are we in this whirlpool of anti-growth, pro-growth, no growth, yes growth, pitting communities against each other? I think my challenge is that it's not so much, how do I want to say this? It's not so much that it's the conversation that's happening. It's that I struggle to see how we've had the right conversation over the last 120 years. It feels like there's something missing. There's something missing in execution. There's something missing in continued communication, once that plan is set, how do we have voices that are saying literally day in and day out, here's how we continue having the conversation. I think there's a missing component there. But what do you think, Tucson? 790-2040. 790-2040. I am curious to get your thoughts. We've got about, let's say, 5 minutes left to this segment. We're going to go 5 minutes on this segment so that we can take our necessary break before welcoming Senator Martha McSally to our live line. Again, if you're just joining us, Senator Martha McSally was kind enough to spend 10 minutes with us on the air from 10:50 to 11 o'clock. So I think we'll go to break about 10:47 or so and make sure that we're set up there. We'll take a bit of a longer segment here and go to our commercial a little bit later, and then finish the hour with Arizona Senator Martha McSally. So I am currently looking at the log of questions and issues that you listening have called in and let Bob and myself know you'd like me to ask. I am going to do my best to keep my promise. As we have time, I'd like to answer some of your questions. And some of your questions, by the way, are questions that I am already planning to ask. Again, we've got 10 minutes to kind of do an overall overview of the senator's Southern Arizona priorities. That's the theme. So we've got about 4 minutes left before we go to our final break, before the senator comes on our live line. In that time, if you have any questions or thoughts or concerns, and feel free to not just leave them with Bob, if you want to go on the air and talk about it, our intent is to have a Southern Arizona priorities conversation. Per usual, just in case I can't get to some of these questions, I want the community of you listening to know what your fellow listeners are talking about. There's a question about the need to regulate bail bonds industry. That's a good question. There are questions about the characterization of U.S. of the detention centers along the border as being compared to concentration camps. There's a question about our water situation and what that means for the agricultural community. Water is a big issue as well. In fact, I want to also shout out. I want to shout out a listener who got me in touch with someone who is going to come on. I would like for them to come on and talk about our water situation in the state of Arizona. So as you are listening, I want you to know that when you ask me to do homework, I do that homework. When you bring up an issue on the air, and especially if you provide a contact, right? Email me, The Creative City Show, the show name, The Creative City Show at gmail.com. Give me an email over there and hook me up with somebody. You know, tell me who I need to be talking to, make an introduction. The joy of this show is that there's plenty of time to be filled, that there are current urgent conversations to be had, and we've got the time to do it. So if you make the connection, I will pursue that connection as it's appropriate. So go ahead and feel free to do that as well. One more time, 790-2040 is the live line. Let's go ahead and head to a break. Make sure that we are good to go for the senator to call in at 10:50. While we're on break, give Bob a call, 790-2040. He'll be taking your live line questions. You're on 10:30 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back. Tucson, welcome back to the show. You're on 10:30 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. You bring the trust in local listening. We bring the news and talk to the very best of our abilities. Once more, logistically, as the senator calls in momentarily, Senator Martha McSally, we have been opening our phone lines up for questions. We have 10 minutes with the senator, and so I want to make sure that we have time to cover a few key topics, as I wanted to talk with her about her Southern Arizona priorities. So in just a minute, those phone lines will close as we enter our conversation with the senator, and I have a log in front of me of what you have called in and asked about that we will try to get to here on the show with the senator. And then when we finish up with Senator Martha McSally, Arizona Senator Martha McSally, we will come back in the 11 o'clock hour to hang out with the crew from Climb. I'm looking forward to chatting with Edward Cruz and some of the graduating cohort of the Climb program. Is basically an accelerator program launching tech startups and growing them here in Tucson. And right on time, we have Senator Martha McSally on the line here in Tucson today. Senator, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Hey, Zach, how are you doing today?
Good, good. I'm excited that you're going to get to see the Center of Opportunity. It's a beautiful space.
Oh, so am I. I've heard so much about it, and unfortunately, I couldn't make the ribbon cutting, so it'll be great to get a tour today and visit with people. I'm really looking forward to it. It's always good to be home.
Wonderful. Yes. No, I'm looking for that for you as well. I've got you for 10 minutes. And like I said, I really appreciate it and wanted to kind of give a snapshot of some of your Southern Arizona priorities. And I got a couple of questions for you and almost kind of a lightning round format. And we'll go from there.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah. So I know you've been busy on the Defense Appropriations Bill or legislation, and I wanted to kind of get a snapshot of your work on that and what the implications are for Southern Arizona specifically.
Absolutely. Well, just like in the House, I'm on the Armed Services Committee in the Senate. So we have the annual defense bill, and even when nothing is working in Washington, D.C., we've passed this annual defense bill, I think, like 55 years in a row to provide really key funding and pay raises and things like that for our troops. So we're actually going to be working on that on the floor of the Senate next week. We already pushed it out of committee. My priorities for Southern Arizona were protecting our national security treasures of Davis-Monthan and Fort Huachuca. These are places like none other. I know this firsthand because that's actually what brought me to Arizona, was being stationed at Davis-Monthan. So protecting our A-10, making sure that the A-10 keeps flying well into the future so it's fully funded. There's also a re-winging program. Some of the inventory needs to have its wings rebuilt for it to continue to sustain into the future. So I've led on securing funding on that for the last several years, and we've done that again in this bill. The EC-130 is an electronic jamming platform that's only at Davis-Monthan. Most people probably are not aware of that. The A-10 gets a lot of attention. And so having that program fully funded, and they're transitioning the guts of the inside of that plane to another platform so it can stay in for the future. So we want to make sure that program stays on track. And that was another important one. Fort Huachuca is also a national security treasure, and making sure we support our electronic proving grounds and our ranges there and the intelligence and the unmanned aerial system training mission that they have there. Plus, we secured some funding for additional resources for our training ranges. What we've found is a lot of our capabilities are, you know, going generations ahead, but our training ranges are still very archaic. So that's going to support the Barry Goldwater ranges and the other ranges we have in Southern Arizona. So that's just a small snapshot of the wins that I led on, and I look forward to getting our bill out of the Senate next week.
Well, thank you, Senator Martha McSally. I want to make sure another Southern Arizona issue gets brought up. I want to get to at least three. I've got four. We'll see how we do.
Okay.
I want to get to at least the third because we talked about it a lot on this show. But many here in Tucson, especially being so close to the border, really see some of the challenges along the border impacting the economy and livability and investment in Santa Cruz County and Nogales, but are also seeing some massive gains in things like Phoenix. And so I think there's just an overall concern of how do we make sure that Southern Arizona can really thrive while the issues at the border are being worked on and worked out. How would you respond to that question?
Sure. So, look, big picture, we got to let the good stuff in and keep the bad stuff out, right? So we've got a crisis going on the border right now because of loopholes in our laws that are being taken advantage of. 144,000 people apprehended just last month, and they're realizing if they just show up with a kid, they're going to be able to be let go. So I have a bill with Lindsey Graham to close these loopholes so that we stop the incentives for the continued illegal activity. And so we got to move that thing out of committee and get it voted on. Additionally, there's some additional funding that needs to come, supplemental appropriations. We should be voting on that next week to provide CBP what they need to deal with the immediate crisis. We also need to pass the follow-on to NAFTA, the USMCA, and the House is holding that up right now. We need to put pressure on the Democrats for Nancy Pelosi to bring that up for a vote. Cross-border commerce is really important for jobs here in Arizona. Over 200,000 jobs are associated with that. So we need to stop playing politics with that, get that passed. And then we need to upgrade our ports of entry. I've been advocating for the San Luis port of entry, the Douglas port of entry, and then the DeConcini port of entry. As part of our border security, we need to bring that infrastructure into the 21st century. A lot of the hard drugs are going through the ports as well, but we also need to support legitimate trade and commerce. So that's just a snapshot of some of the things I'm leading on related to the border.
For sure. No, thank you, Senator, for the lightning round version of our time together. We have we're halfway through that time already, and I'm grateful for for your generosity of time. I wanted to actually talk to you about the USMCA. You oppose the seasonality provision. Can you give an overview of what that is real briefly?
Sure. So there is not a seasonality provision in it right now. I want to make sure that it stays out of it. And this is one of those issues where we have a lot of jobs in southern Arizona because different times of the year, you know, we're importing fresh fruits and vegetables, specifically tomatoes from Mexico. And we are a logistical hub, and that creates jobs for Arizonans, and it keeps prices affordable for families at the grocery store. So what we have is Florida, actually, to be, you know, candid, has been trying to protect their approach on this, and actually that'll end up hurting Arizonans and hurting the price of tomatoes. So we've been trying to get the seasonality provision to stay out so that we can protect Arizona jobs and prices at the grocery store. There's also another element to that we're working on with the Department of Commerce. But just know it's all about Arizona. I represent Arizona, and I want to make sure that we keep our interests when we're at the table.
Yes, Senator Martha McSally, it's almost like you're looking at my notes. The other issue related to the border that is a timely question is, I'm sure you've seen the characterization of the detention centers along the border as concentration camps. As an Arizona representative, what do you think of that characterization?
I think it's absurd and inappropriate, and she should apologize to every single person who's got a family member who survived the Holocaust. We have got an overwhelming crisis at the border where we have got individuals taking advantage of loopholes in our laws. They are crossing illegally. Our Border Patrol agents, CBP, are overwhelmed. We have to house them and process them, but they are being overwhelmed, and many of them are being let go. And so I really wish the left would stop with their extreme rhetoric and playing politics with this issue so that we could change the law, fund our Border Patrol and everything they need there so we can secure our border. I think you may have seen there's been testimony just this week that they said over the last year, I think over 40 different nationalities were found illegally crossing our border. Once the word is out that, you know, there's just really little enforcement because of these loopholes, this is a national security issue, and we deserve to be able to control who comes in and out of our country. And I wish the Democrats would come to the table and solve this problem with us.
Senator, you're answering these questions so quickly. We've got time for one more bonus question.
All right.
And I want to make my listeners happy, and I know your constituents will be really happy as well to hear your perspective on our water situation and one item that you're working on right now to preserve and maintain our water.
Absolutely. Well, the first major piece of legislation I led on that's been signed into law since I've been in the Senate is the Colorado River Drought Contingency Plan. Because of the shortages, this has 40 million people, seven states, and Mexico relying on the Colorado River. There would have been draconian measures by the federal government had we not come to agreements to how it was going to be dealt with. The state, under Governor Ducey's leadership, did a lot of heavy lifting, but it took an act of Congress to codify it. So I led that effort. Actually, Raul Grijalva led it in the House. So this is an example of both sides of the aisle working together on behalf of Arizona, and we got it across the finish line. We also have some water infrastructure legislation we just introduced with a number of other senators to be able to increase our opportunity for updating our water infrastructure for farmers, ranchers, tribal communities across the board. Water is our future, and so there's a lot more that needs to be done related to this, and I chair the Water and Power Subcommittee, so you can expect me to continue to lead to make sure we got a good water future here in Arizona.
Senator, thank you so much for your time today. Enjoy the Center of Opportunity. It's a beautiful space. Thanks for coming on our show, and let's do this soon.
Thanks a lot, Jack. Take care.
Thanks, Senator. Senator Martha McSally, Tucson. We'll be right back for Hour 2.